Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this Wednesday, February 6th. I'm Ray Graff. Well, the mercury has been on a roller coaster ride in the Northeast in recent days, from lows to below zero to highs nearing 60. It has been a wild ride, to put it mildly. At the end of January, ice jams ripped boats from their moorings on the Hudson River, sending them unattended down the waterway, crashing into Capital Region bridges. We all saw the pictures. Here to help us understand what's going on, his beloved meteorologist, Jason Goff. His new website is jasonsweather.com. If you have a question about wind chills, the dreaded polar vortex, or any other weather topic, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Meteorologist Jason Goff, after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. According to the National Weather Service, Albany began February with a low of 8 below zero. On February 4th, the thermometer hit 56. That's a swing of 64 degrees in about 80 hours. Wow. In the studio to help us figure all this wacky weather out is meteorologist Jason Goff, formerly of News Channel 13 in Albany. His new website is jasonsweather.com. And it's a pretty interesting place to be. The number to call is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, or you can email your weather question to voxpop@wamc.org. Jason Goff, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, sir. Nice to see you, as always.
Last time you were here, you were just putting the finishing touches on jasonsweather.com.
Yeah.
It's in full operation now.
Full operation now, and I'm excited, especially as we get into the milder weather. I think I'll have, you know, more people will have more reason to go there just because a lot of the forecasts for outside things, the track aside, but, you know, cutting the grass and all kinds of events and things that go on.
Yeah.
And so I'm having a lot of fun. It's a hobby. It's a lot of fun. And it's funny you said that about the swing in temperatures from minus 8 into 56 degrees. One of my blogs I posted the other day, the last two Februaries, we've hit 70 or higher three times.
Really?
Yeah.
Holy mackerel.
Not bad, right?
Yeah, that's interesting. The cold weather, though, that was
brutal.
Quite a snap, man. And the Midwest got it worse than we did.
A lot worse than we did. I was looking at some of the readings there, and the wind chills were 60-plus degrees below zero. I mean, that's just outrageous.
I mean, I don't think it's possible to quantify it unless you've been in it, but that's dangerous.
Oh, yeah. I mean, after a while, your lungs just can't breathe in that stuff, you know? I mean, and they closed. I mean, I would imagine, I didn't do the research on this, but I heard all the universities in the Midwest, you know, University of Iowa, and then all the way up in the Midwest, they were all closed from the cold.
Yep.
I can't imagine that happens very often.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. Jason Goff is our guest. If you have a question about the weather, this is the time to do it. Jason's new website is jasonsweather.com. You know, you made a big deal about saying, you know, I'll give individual forecasts for people.
Yeah.
At one point, you're going to hit saturation, and you're going to be like, no more of that, man.
No, you know what? It's been good. I did a lot last summer just through my Facebook page, and I get a few emails here and there from people that are traveling, flying somewhere, driving somewhere, but I'll get a lot more of those in the milder weather because people are, you know, they're going to the Jersey Shore, they're going to the Cape, they're going up to Lake George or wherever, and it's a lot of fun. And I'll tell you something else I've done too, Ray. People can sign up on there for a forecast email. So you'll get an email in your inbox every morning, 6 o'clock. It's brief, to the point. If you want more, you can go over to my site, but this morning I sent out, I think it was like 819.
Okay, this is the thing. I mean, at some point, Jason's going to need an intern.
That's fine.
That's going to be a lot of work. And come summertime, when it's 4,000 people wanting forecasts. Sure you thought this thing through?
I have indeed. It's all good, man. Don't you worry.
All right. Jason Goff is our guest, and we'll go to the phones. 800-348-2551 is the number. Dave in Pittsfield. Dave, you're on. Maybe he's not.
Hello, Dave.
Hello, Dave.
Sounds like he's trying to get on.
I think so. I think Dave is somewhere out there. We'll give him a chance. No? Okay.
All right. Well, he can try us back,
Dave. Yeah, call us back, Dave. So the polar vortex is on everybody's lips. What was it a few years ago? It was some other term, but polar vortex is the thing now.
It is. It's the thing. And, you know, what happened is some, and I can say this now because I'm out of television, some dopey TV consultant came up with this. Just like the naming of winter storms. Don't get me on that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, I'm with you. I'm with you there.
But, yeah, so the polar vortex, it's a...
It is a thing, though.
Oh, it is a thing. It's been around long before you and I were here, and it's going to be around long after we're gone. But it's just sort of this new concept, if you will, by getting out into the mainstream. And so, you know, because it has a nice ring to it, the polar vortex.
Yeah. Well, you can see it, though. You can imagine what it is. You can
see
this ring of cold air zipping around and then oscillating down our way.
Absolutely. It has real-time consequences on our weather. It could bring cold to North America, Europe. I mean, we had a little dip in the polar vortex last March, and if you remember that, it was our 10th snowiest month on record. So we had these coastal storms going, and then that cold air was just locked in place. It was nice and deep. So in a nutshell, really what the polar vortex is, just to kind of think about like a ring of wind, kind of a pin, if you will, up over the North Pole and the Arctic Circle and all of that, and it continues to circulate. What will happen, sometimes those winds will slow down or even reverse.
Yeah.
Not quite sure why that is. This has not been studied for very long, but scientists are continuing to check that out. But when it slows down, think about it kind of oozing out of its shape.
Right.
And that's when that colder air will come to drain down. It'll fall right down in, and it might hit the Midwest like it did last time. It might hit us, or it might miss us altogether, and that's when you hear about the hideous conditions in Europe. But it is a real thing, and we're going to have to deal with it every year.
Well, and presumably we've been dealing with this before we knew what it was, right? It goes way back.
Right, yes.
You say it oozes out of shape. What puts it back into shape?
Those winds will pick back up again. So in essence, it kind of corrals it. The jet stream will kind of kink a little bit farther back to the north in that sense. Not that the jet stream is directly involved with it, but that it'll allow that colder air to drain down. So the winds will pick up again, and it'll kind of just re-corral all that.
You know, when I was complaining about the sub-zero temperatures, and I'm terrible, the older I get, the more I want to get the heck out of the Northeast and
Understood.
Go south. I think I heard on the news that 7 years ago we had 15 below. In the Albany area?
Oh, I'd have to look that. Yeah. I
don't recall it being that cold. Maybe I was younger then, but
7 years ago?
Yeah.
So what, you were in your mid-30s then? You should be able to remember that, Ray.
Mid-30s.
Yeah.
That's pretty funny. All right, Jason Goff is our guest, comic relief. Margaret in Woodstock. Margaret, you're on.
Hi. There's been some talk about the magnetic north moving, and moving much faster.
Yeah, it's moving, all right.
Than usual. Well, I got to thinking that what has happened in the last 20 years that's really different, that has to do with the atmosphere. And we use cyberspace, which is the only thing I can think of. So I'm just throwing this out there. Oh. Is there any thought that using internet and vibrating the atmosphere so much is doing anything to the magnetic north?
To be honest with you, I would like to garner some kind of an answer, but I don't have one. I saw an article about it. I didn't read it, so I'm not versed in how that. But the pole does move.
Well, it's moving now, and it's rapidly heading towards Siberia, and so there's all these recalculations that have to be done with navigation.
Mm-hmm.
But what I think, Margaret, is the culprit here is all that liquid iron in the middle of the Earth that moves in its own currents.
Yes.
And it's flowing around. And so what will happen is every 80,000 years, I think, is the poles will actually shift. They will not the Earth flipping, but the magnetic poles will will go north to south. And it's happened, and scientists have been able to look at this and say, oh, yeah, it happened 800,000 years ago. It happened again X number of years ago. And so I don't think it's cause to panic yet. But I think it's mainly because of what's going on deep within the Earth.
I think I should host this show.
Yes, they mentioned that. And then, the fact that it's moving so fast now, yeah. which they said was unusual in this program I was listening to.
It is.
So that's why I thought I'd put it out there and see if that was anything that might have disturbed anything.
Now my curiosity is piqued. I saw that article. I will have to go back and read it and check it out. Thank you very much, Margaret, for that.
Thanks, Margaret. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Jason Goff is our guest. Layla in Mount Tremper. Hello, Layla.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was out last week when we had that snowstorm, and then the following afternoon they had the predicted snow squalls. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, you know, I'd be outside and it wasn't really snowing, and all of a sudden it felt like a mini blizzard would blow up and then it would, you know, peter off. And I was just wondering if there's a definition of why a snow squall happens and if it corresponds to like a rain shower.
Oh, yeah.
In the summer, it's just cold weather.
Yes, no, that's a great question because that was quite an example. It was last Wednesday, I believe, and that thing came blasting through here.
Oh, my gosh.
There's a new product, actually, that the National Weather Service has out, and they will issue, actually, snow squall warnings.
We saw that.
They're basically like the winter equivalent of a severe thunderstorm warning.
Yeah.
And just like severe thunderstorms can form along a cold front sometimes, this was the same deal. There was a lot of juice in the atmosphere. And there was juice in terms of energy.
Right.
And there was enough moisture to really get things going. But you could see the squalls, and I was just, you know, thinking to myself, like, oh, man, if this was May or June, we would be really busting a move with some thunderstorms all over the place. So
right.
It is the processes are a little bit different, but kind of along the same ideas. You just don't have as much energy to work with in the winter as you do in the summer.
And it moved through so quickly.
Yes.
So it was in Albany, and then you hear, oh, it's heading east. It's now and it's in the Berkshires,
yep.
And it's moving through.
And it just a line, just like a line of showers or thunderstorms. It was a line of snow. It came on through, and then behind it, the wind really picked up, and the temperatures dropped off. So it was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
It was a good call by the Weather Service to put out these snow squall warnings because as Layla was saying, like, it was a little mini blizzard. That's really what it was like.
Yeah.
Visibility drops in a hurry, and then the roads get slick in a hurry. So, it was really something else. It was quite a little squall.
All right, Layla, thanks for the call. We have to take a break. Jason Goff is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. 800-348-2551. If you have a question about the weather, we'll be back. We talk weather today with our favorite weatherman, meteorologist Jason Goff is here. 800-348-2551 is the number. Jason's new weather website is jasonsweather.com. Pretty easy to remember. This email came in, Jason, from Bob. And Bob writes, we sometimes hear of a storm moving from west to east, approaching the Atlantic coast, and transferring its energy to a storm heading up the coast. How does that transfer occur?
Basically what happens is in the mid- or even in the lower upper levels of the atmosphere. But what you usually want to do is you look around 500 millibars and you will have that transfer of energy where another storm is kind of waiting in the wings. If you remember the so-called perfect storm,
where
you had all these things kind of come together. So as a storm is gathering its strength, it's going to pull available energy, moisture from wherever it can. And you'll typically will see that. You might see a storm coming through the southeastern states and it'll transfer its energy over off of the Carolinas. So in essence, what it is it's a storm and it's just kind of survival of the fittest, if you will, and it'll bring that in, get it stronger, and then it'll go about its business.
But what is the mechanism? Is it a low pressure moving to a high pressure or vice versa?
No, it's actually low pressure moving to lower pressure.
Okay.
It is a high to low, but both storms are low pressure.
Right.
So the higher pressure goes to that lower.
So the lower the pressure, the more you win that battle.
Yes.
Interesting.
That's
Jason
right.
Goff, our guest. The number is 800-348-2551. Catherine in Schenectady. Hello, Catherine.
Hello. I have a question about tornadoes. I hope you can clarify. I vaguely remember reading once about how they're formed and something about two different air masses with different temperatures.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe warm below trying to rise and cold above trying to fall. and then it sort of tumbles so that the spiraling actually started horizontally.
Yes, that's right.
As I recall this description. Maybe you can clarify that.
All right, I love this.
Yeah, no, you've started it off very well, Catherine. That's there still is a lot of research to be done, and a lot of very intelligent men and women meteorologists are working on this because, you know, why do some storms drop a tornado and others do not? So you have a lot of different things. The warm air and the cold air is a really kind of a simplistic view. That's how you do, though, get things started.
Yeah.
So you want to picture a thunderstorm, right, and it's starting to really get going, and it's feeding itself. It's drawing in a lot of air from the ground, right? You have a lot of updrafts, a lot of warm, humid air coming into the storm. It's feeding it. Same mechanism as a hurricane. You get that latent heat of condensation.
Yeah.
It produces more energy and it kind of feeds off of each other. But inside of that storm, it is very chaotic. And you have winds that are blowing, not like we're used to on the ground, where they're blowing, you know, sideways in your face or at your back or whatever. But in a storm, the winds are blowing all over the place. And they do start to develop what we call shear, and that is a change in wind direction with height. And they do get into this tumbling action. And in essence, what can happen is you might have an updraft that would tip into that column of rotating air that is horizontal, and then it becomes vertical and it drops out. Now, the tornadoes will come out of usually that same backside of that storm, you know, on that rear flank of the storm. You watch as it's coming through. If you know, you can. It's difficult to explain over the radio as opposed to, like, there are some really good diagrams and things out there. But that's the general gist of it, where you do have sort of these air currents, and they start to spiral around each other. The storm itself will begin to rotate, which also helps to increase the shear. And then you'll have that thin column of air that will drop down, at least out of the cloud, as a funnel cloud. And if it reaches the ground, that's when it becomes a tornado.
Work for you, Catherine?
Thank you.
Thanks. Alrighty, you're
Thanks
welcome.
Thanks a lot for the call. And hurricanes will spawn tornadoes many times.
Yes. That's a different mechanism, though, in a sense, because you do have a lot of shear, but that shear is caused basically by friction, because as the tornadoes make their way over land, they'll tend to slow down.
The hurricanes.
There's a lot more. Yes. There's a lot more terrain. So it's just like, you know, if you run your hand across a desk, you don't have much difficulty. But if you run it across, let's say, a piece of sandpaper or something that has a lot more surface area on it, it's going to slow it down. And that's what will help to create more wind shear with that storm, because then all of a sudden the winds, instead of being a little bit more uniformly directed, they're going to start getting more sheared off as you go up with height.
So this is interesting. So shear can be an enemy of a hurricane. But it's a progenitor of a tornado.
Yes. Well, in the sense of what you're saying, where it is an enemy of a hurricane, that type of shear is where you're basically looking at straight line winds that are aloft. And in essence, what it does is it blows the top off of the hurricane.
Yeah.
So it's a hurricane, just like any other storm, the higher it gets, the nastier it's going to be. That's why you hear about thunderstorms. Oh, this, you know, the cloud tops on this were 60,000 feet.
Right.
Something that we don't see around here, but you'll hear even 70,000 feet in the plains sometimes. Around here, we might hit 50.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, the higher they go, the nastier they're going to be. So if you inhibit that through winds, just like blowing the froth off of a beer or something like that, it's the same kind of an idea, and it doesn't allow it to bubble up. And it in essence, can just kind of rip the hurricane apart, because it disrupts that inflow of air, which disrupts the whole process of the strengthening of the storm.
Jason Goff is our guest. Jasonsweather is his .com. Jasonsweather.com is the new website. Our number is 800-348-2551, and we'll get right back to the phones, I promise. I just want to follow up on the tornadoes, because the green clouds, and I know we've talked about this before, but that is the most striking and sort of shocking. The yellow-green look, and it's ice, right?
Yeah, it's a lot of times you'll have – what'll happen is if you are – and you hear storm chasers talking about this, where you'll have chasers or whoever, even if you're standing out in your yard and you get a lot of hail and then it becomes very still, very quiet, the hail stops, that's when you have to look out. If you can see that storm from afar, that's when you're talking about seeing that green sky. That's the hail, the ice in the cloud, and what it in essence is doing is it's scattering out all of the light except for the green part of the spectrum. So you'll see that. So it's not a direct correlation to a tornado. It's just that a lot of times when you see that sort of thing, you know, so I'm not suggesting that every hailstorm drops a tornado,
no.
But, you know, you are going to have hail in a storm that does.
Mm, gotcha. Jason Goff is our guest. Now we'll go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Jim in North Pownell. Hello, Jim in North Pownell.
Hey, Ray. Hey, Jason. Great show as always. I just wanted to make a real quick comment about that squall line that came through last week. My workshop is 75 feet away from my house, and I could not see my workshop.
Yeah.
It was the lowest visibility that I have ever observed, and I've been in meteorology since 1970.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it was something else because you had two things working against you there for visibility. First of all, you had the intensity of the snow because it was coming hard, but then it also you had the wind that was coming in during it and behind it, blowing that snow around. So that is going to drop your visibility like crazy.
Yep, 75 feet.
Wow.
And it was totally blanked out.
How about it?
Great show.
Thanks,
Jim. It was pretty impressive. I mean, it really was.
It was really impressive.
And I like the idea of the National Weather Service putting out those alerts. If you're on the highway, get off to the side of the road.
Exactly. Yeah. No, it's a great product that they've put out. And again, it's akin to a severe thunderstorm warning. And, you know, they look the same on a map. I mean, a different color. You know, the thunderstorm warnings are orange, and these are more like a purplish color. But they look, you know, the shape of them was the same. If you didn't know any better, like, what is this?
You know, it's boggles my mind that there could be as much energy behind something that would produce squalls like that
as something?
A thunderstorm in the middle of summer when it's 85 degrees.
It's really something, isn't it? Because heat is what really drives all of these things.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
But you have enough dynamics going on. It's the same idea of being out, off of Lake Ontario and having this thunder snow, you know, with these intense lake effect bands.
Yeah.
That's a lot of juice in the atmosphere, man. Those things are open for
Have
business.
You seen thunder snow?
I have not. I have yet to really see like a lake effect kind of a thunder snow. I really do want to see that. But I remember on occasion just, you know, living in different places having that. I'll tell you what, I remember thunder snow when we had that October storm here in 1987.
Oh, yeah.
We had it that morning. And, you know, that not a surprise because it is a tall order to get snow to stick in early October.
Yep.
And that's exactly what happened.
I remember one Christmas Eve before that. It must have been the late 70s. We had it right around here. And it was quite something to see the flashes of lightning and then hear the thunder and the snow is falling.
It is.
Cool.
And it's different than the summertime, too, because it's a lot quieter.
Yeah.
Because you don't have the rain. You don't have the wind generally like that. So it is quite a phenomenon.
Let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Jason Goff is our guest. His new website is jasonsweather.com. Jeff in Amsterdam. Jeff, you're on.
Hey, thank you very much. Jason, I live up in Amsterdam in the Mohawk Valley, just a mile from the river, north of the river, and watch the weather all the time, both in the sky as well as on these radar apps. And I've noticed quite a few times that storms coming from the west seem to split up over the Mohawk Valley. They go north and south, but they don't come to me. And it's made me wonder whether that kind of landform affects the weather and other landforms affect the weather, and maybe you could comment on that.
Yeah, there are a couple of different things when you're dealing with valleys. You know, air tends to get funneled down through the valleys, okay? We were talking about tornadoes before. One of the things that was studied in this area was the so-called Hudson-Mohawk convergence, because you have, and that's the shear, right? That's the changing of wind direction with height. So if you have air coming in from the west, say down the Mohawk Valley, but then you have air flowing up from the south, there's your wind direction.
Yeah.
It can be whatever it is, 90 or 110 degrees. Now, so those types of things can influence weather on a micro level. As far as this splitting goes, it's interesting because I've heard a lot of people talk about that in various places it's not specific to any one place. People tend to maybe notice it when it happens over their house, as opposed to, you know, if it were to happen in Saratoga or Ravenna or Copaic or someplace.
Yeah.
But it is basically luck of the draw. There's not anything that's going to force storms to split and sort of circumvent Amsterdam or any place else. It just kind of depends on how everything is lined up as that system or its energy moves through, if that makes sense to you.
It makes sense. In fact, the idea that they were splitting because of the valley seemed counterintuitive. So
yeah, that's exactly right. That's a great point, because you would tend to have confluence as opposed to difluence in that sense, and so they wouldn't. So yeah, that's a kind of a separate animal. But the valleys do influence flow, which can indirectly or even directly affect our weather as well on a micro level. And on a micro time level as well.
Jeff, thank you for the call. Jason Goff, our guest on Vox Pop. The number is 800-348-2551. Nancy in Gansvoort. Nancy, you're on.
Hi. Great program. I'm originally from extreme northeast Iowa, right on the Mississippi River. And, of course, we grow up with tornado warnings all the time. And they shut off all the programs. And I just want to ask two quick questions. I think they're related. I was in a tornado. I never have been able to see one. I'm one of those people that would love to see one. But it came over our farmhouse. We lived way up on the ridge. And it was at night, which is nasty. That's the thing.
Yes.
Everybody in the Midwest
yeah.
knows it comes at night. It's really, really dangerous. But it was before bedtime. And I lived in an old farmhouse with 22 windows. And all the windows, we had no putty on them, were shaking like crazy. And the next thing I know, my 7-year-old son is standing in front of me, and he's screaming, but I can't hear a word. And I pick him up, and I'm running down the stairs, and I see that in the house, everything that is lightweight is just floating around. And all I can hear is this loud, huge, banging, roaring noise, and everything looks so peaceful. It was just like floating around. It was pieces of paper, anything lightweight. Hmm. By the time I got to the basement door, everything stopped. All the stuff dropped to the floor. And I know it was a tornado because my neighbors actually saw it. It was over the house, took the top of the cupola right off the house, sucked books out of the attic.
Wow.
Possessions. They were returning them for weeks thereafter. So my question is, what is that? I know everybody in the Midwest goes, what's what tornadoes do? They don't tell you why. Why did everything start floating? And then the other question, really quick, I think it's related to that, is that I could feel it. I could feel a tornado coming. Even when I was a child, you could just step outside and there was just something that, I don't know, it's like in your, in the back of your neck. I don't know where it is, but you could feel that something like a violent episode was about to happen.
Interesting.
I'm not saying mystical. Something you could actually feel. So I'm wondering if those are related and if you could explain it.
So cool. So let's start with the floating of the things in the house.
Well, I've not heard of that before, but I'm not well-versed in tornadoes. I just have not had a lot of experience with them. But I will tell you that what in essence happens, and there used to be an old tale or whatever you want to call it, where people would say, if you lift the windows up, if there's a tornado coming, it will help to save your
equalize.
That's in theory, sure, but that doesn't work because you're talking about the pressure differences are so great, it's not going to make any difference. Don't waste your time is really the key to take away from that. So the pressure outside, because tornadoes have the lowest pressure on Earth, like trying to get them, they're trying to actually get them measured. But in order to do that, the tornado has to go right over a sensor that is placed in advance, and the sensor has to survive.
Right.
Not an easy thing to do on any of those levels. But so you have really low pressure. So in essence, the pressure inside the house gets very high, and that's why you've seen, like, you know, I did cover the aftermath of a tornado in Corpus Christi, and I covered one, actually, the one that hit Springfield here as well, back in 2011. But in Corpus, this thing went right downtown, and there was a parking lot of a restaurant, and all of the car windows were blown out. So what happened was, because cars are sealed up tight, the air was so low, the pressure was so high, Mother Nature abhors a vacuum, so that air just said, well, these windows aren't good enough,
right,
and we're going to bust right on through. So it has to have That has to do with the pressure differences. As far as being able to kind of sense a storm like that, people do get a feel for the weather. They really do, especially when you're out in a place, like she was saying, out in northeastern Iowa, where it's a lot of flat land. People have a sense of the weather, and you can tell when pressure is dropping. You can feel it even in your ear sometimes. And so, again, along those lines of an extreme area of low pressure, that's your tornado.
You know, I remember being down, I think, northern Westchester, I was living at the time, years and years ago, and there was the greenish-yellow sky,
mm-hmm.
and it was a hot summer day, and then this, and it was tough to breathe. And I believe it was low pressure. The pressure had gotten so low that the lungs were basically struggling just a little bit.
That could be. I would more perhaps blame it on the dew points may have come up a lot.
Maybe.
It's difficult to breathe when you have a lot of humidity in the air. It's actually the
I've
lightest.
I've been around a lot of humidity before. This was a different case.
It was a different type of thing?
It wasn't like I couldn't breathe, but it was like, oh, I'm straining a little bit here.
Sometimes along these, especially if it's a line of some kind, a squall line, a front. I see we have a question coming up about a
next,
dry
yeah.
line. We don't have dry lines in this part of the country, but sometimes moisture will pool out it right out ahead of those things, so you can see a little spike in the dew point if you can measure it. So you might have a dew point temperature that might go into the middle or even upper 70s.
Yeah.
And our lungs are designed to breathe dry air, not humid air, so that does make it. That's why people say, oh, the air is so heavy. It's because it's difficult for them to breathe. That's because of the high water content.
Well, of course, the first thing I did was open all the windows in the house, which is obviously wouldn't do any good now.
Hey, you know what? But back in that day, that was the, you know, in theory, it's great, but it's kind of like, you know, putting a Band-Aid on a severed arm. It's not going to do you any good.
Yeah, that doesn't help.
No.
Let's take a break. Jason Goff is here. His new website is jasonsweather.com. Our number on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551. We'll be right back. Vox Pop on WAMC. The number is 800-348-2551. If you've never tuned in before, Vox Pop, it's a call-in show. We usually have a guest who knows what he's talking about or she's talking about. Jason Goff is here. He's a meteorologist. His new website is jasonsweather.com. And let's jump right back to the phones, and we go over to Mark in Valencia. Mark.
Yes.
Hello, you're on.
Hello, Ray. Hello, Jason. I've been listening to your conversations about tornadoes. And when I've spent time out in the Great Plains, a lot of the meteorologists are talking about dry lines and trying to predict when a tornado may drop. What exactly is a dry line?
A dry line, it's a fascinating thing. And I've never really, even when I lived in Texas, I lived on the south, on the South Texas, basically right along the coast, and the dry lines were confined to the north. They'll go through Dallas and the Hill Country and then north into the plains from there. Just like a cold front is a distinct line between colder air and warmer air, a dry line is a distinct line between humid air and dry air. Mm. And in essence, you're talking about the same kind of mechanism where you're getting lift, right? If you want to even get a cloud, what do you have to do? You've got to get air into the atmosphere so that it condenses. It can condense
right.
into clouds, and then you know, then you're off and running from there. So what a dry line will do is just that. So with that being a distinct difference, you have that cooler, drier air. Sometimes it's actually even warmer air, but certainly drier air that's coming in behind that dry line. And I'm talking about big-time differences where you might see dew point temperatures that'll drop 50 degrees.
Yeah.
Especially in places like West Texas and you're on the lee side of the Rockies up into Colorado. So, in essence, that acts like a kind of a cold front. And it will get the lift that you need, plenty of available energy in the atmosphere. You get a little bit of a boost from some mid-level energy as well. Boom. You have your tornadoes or certainly some severe weather where you can get lines that will come through with dry lines. But we don't get them here.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Jason.
All righty, you're welcome.
Thanks for the call, Mark. Our number is 800-348-2551. Let's go to Nancy in Schenectady. Nancy.
Hi. I'm wondering about, you mentioned it actually at the beginning of the program about the roller coaster weather. It's something that I've certainly been aware of not only this winter, but definitely last summer. And the farm where we get our food, our vegetables and meat, they have really suffered the results of the roller coaster weather. And I had heard at some point a connection of that with global warming, climate change, whatever you want to call it. I don't remember exactly what the source was, and I'm just kind of curious about that, if it seems to be something that okay. was definitely related.
Yeah. Well, that is certainly one of the things that we're looking at, because global warming leads to climate change, right? So they're two different things. Global warming is happening, no matter what other folks want to say.
But before you start, is it demonstrable that the weather is more tumultuous?
Variable and yes. tumultuous. That is one of the theories, if you will, with this. And you know, you don't even want to call it a theory, because certainly we've seen it happen. It's just difficult to draw a straight line and say, well, the reason that we went from -8 to 56 is because of global warming. But that is one of the things that the models have predicted. At the rate that we're warming the planet and with climate change, what you're talking about is more cold outbreaks. You're talking about more warm spells, more dry spells, more floods, bigger storms, because you're going to have more available moisture in the atmosphere.
Yeah.
Because the warmer the air is, the more moisture it can hold. So that is part of one of the things, or certainly one of the things that we will have to deal with going forward, are these sort of swings that are a result of global warming and climate change when you're talking about these types of events that are going on. The polar vortex is a perfect example of that, because as that gets disrupted, the flow in that wind gets disrupted. It's still being studied, but that will bring you this cold break. And it'll promote certain idiots out there to say, well, what happened to global warming? Well, first of all, you have to think about the concept of global. But secondly, these are things that can affect different people different ways around the planet.
Nancy, thanks for the call. Jason Goff is our guest. Jasonsweather.com is the website. Chris in Northampton. Chris, you're on.
Hi, how are you? Good afternoon.
Hi.
Hey, Chris.
Can you hear me okay?
Sure.
Yes.
Hi. Hey, I have a short question. I was riding my bicycle out on a kind of a late summer day. I don't remember if it was a couple of years back now, but, you know, there were quite a few big high cloud stacks around, and I looked up towards the sky, wondering if it might be, you know, a storm brewing. And I saw lightning start happening inside of the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
And it kept happening, so I stopped and, you know, took a film of it. But I'd never seen anything like that before, but it was like a little mini storm inside of the cloud that were happening.
Yeah, that's
I
cool.
I wondered if you could talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so basically what happens is that's the beginning of any thunderstorm. You're going to have lightning in the clouds first. Sometimes you'll build up enough of a potential difference where that lightning bolt will reach the ground. More times than not, it'll actually stay within the clouds. But the processes by which they begin are all the same. So you have pieces of ice, in essence, in storms, and they're bumping around because of all the winds that are going on, and they're starting to build up charges, building up static electricity, and then you get those differences where you'll start to see lightning that'll be within the cloud. It's cloud-to-cloud lightning is actually what it's called. And then if you get enough of a difference between the cloud base and the ground, that's when you'll get cloud-to-ground lightning. The thing about, I mean, even in the cloud as well, but the cloud, you have more moisture, so you have more channels for lightning to travel through. Air is a very poor conductor of electricity.
Mm-hmm.
It takes the equivalent of about 3,000 volts of power to move electricity 1 inch in open air. So you do the math. That's a lot of energy from a cloud base at, let's say, 1,500 feet down to the ground, 1,500 feet, however many inches are in that, times 3,000. That's a big deal. But in the clouds, you have more moisture. You have more of a moisture concentration, and water is a conductor of electricity, and so you'll tend to see that.
Yeah, because there was like multiple, seemed like there were multiple bolts going off, you know, and they came every 15, 20 seconds. You could just sit there and watch it.
Yeah, and then, and sometimes too, you'll have more than one storm, so you'll have individual cells. Like each thunderstorm cell, this is maybe about 20 minutes worth, but if you have a storm that goes on for an hour or longer, you'll have a couple of those cells working in tandem.
Wow.
So you could be seeing a developing little cluster of storms at that time.
Chris, thank you for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Listening to Chris talk about lightning, I recall hearing in the summer when you see lightning off to the distance. Someone said, oh, that's heat lightning.
Oh,
doesn't exist, though, right?
Does not exist.
All right. How did that myth begin?
I have no idea. It's so funny. And I always tell people, like, if you can win, you know, 10 bucks on a bar stool, man, go ahead. Because I've had people, not recently, but back not too long ago, yeah, argue with me till they're blue in the face. Oh, it's heat lightning. It's no. Well, all lightning is heat lightning, right? You have to have heat to generate the storm to start. And then you go from there. So this is the way I always describe it to kids. So let's say you and your buddy are standing on opposite ends of the lake. Your friend throws a rock in at his or her end, and the ripples don't reach your shore, the waves. Well, sound is a wave. And what happens is the sound just dissipates before it reaches your ear, just like the water waves dissipate before they reach your shore. Now, does that mean that your friend didn't throw the rock in the water? Of course not. So anybody that's underneath that storm, they're not saying, hey, that's heat lightning, because they're getting lit up and they're hearing plenty of thunder.
All right, fair enough. Jason Goff is our guest. 800-348-2551, the number. Tam in Delmar. Tam.
Hi. Thank you for a very interesting show. I have done personal things about global warming. Like, I have solar energy from a farm, a solar farm. I compost, I recycle, but I'm very aware that this is a huge, bigger issue than just individual action can handle. And I wondered what your thoughts were about what really needs to happen.
Well, that's a start. I mean, you know, it collectively people can make a difference, right? Like, one person can't. I mean, I recycle every week, and I know full well that if whether or not I recycle is not going to have any impact on the planet. It's whatever you feel you think you need to do. But collectively, if people do that, then that's when you start to make a difference. We could do an entire show, and again, Ray and I have talked about this, but we could do an entire show on global warming and climate change.
Which we have done, actually. So.
Yeah, which would be great. And certainly there are a lot more people locally that know a lot more about it than I do, but it is one of those things where it's going to take a community collectiveness to really make a difference in this and to continue to invest in, you know, other alternative energy sources to try to cut down our CO2 emissions, rather. That's what's going to make the difference. So if you have a place like Jiminy Peak that installs a lot of wind turbines to compensate for their power to run their chairlifts and their snowmaking equipment and all that, those are the types of things that are going to really matter.
Okay. Let's go over to Jim in Adams, Mass. Hello there, Jim.
Hey, Ray. How you doing?
Good. Nice to have you here.
Yeah, Ray. Yeah, when we were kids growing up in the 50s, the street across from our house was just a great big wooded hillside. And we just loved to sit out on the front porch there, had a big divan swing type couch out there, and watch the thunderstorm, the wind thrashing the trees back and forth and twisting them around. And it was better than television.
Yeah, and cheaper, okay. Huh?
And television was a new thing back then, Ray.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's great.
You weren't around then.
No, I was not yet, but
I'm an old sucker.
I get it, man. Jim, well, thank you for the call, my friend. We appreciate it. And quickly now, let's zip over to Latham. Latham, Emily is calling. Hello.
Hi. I just wanted to see if the meteorologist has my son wants to know how wind chill is calculated.
Love it.
Yep. It is not a straight-up calculation. There's a little bit of massaging in there, if you will.
Oh, some artistry.
A little bit of artistry, yes, because the concept of wind chill is a little difficult for people to understand. Wind does remove heat from your body more effectively than if you were just standing in no wind. So how does that kind of how do you take that into account on your skin? That's why we have wind chill advisories and wind chill warnings that are out and all of that.
Yeah.
So back in 2001, actually, the Weather Service recalibrated their chart. If you've seen those charts, you know, where you have the wind speed on one axis and the temperature on the other, and then the two collide, and this is what your wind chill temperature is. There are some equations that went into that, and it was actually lowered. So I can't give you any specifics, but I'm just off the top of my head. Like, you know, let's say it was 10 degrees with a 20-mile-an-hour wind. The wind chill before might have been 20 below, but now the updated wind chill is like 8 below.
Okay.
So they did put more science into it, but there you have to also take into account the physiology of people and pets and things like that. So it's not a really neat conversion, like going from Celsius to Fahrenheit, but it's close enough, and those numbers are good enough to where we can get at least in the ballpark of knowing what kind of perceived temperature our body's going to have to deal with when you have a temperature and a wind speed combined. I'm sorry, I'm not able to give you any more definitive answer than that.
That's okay. I understand. It kind of makes me think of how dew point is calculated. That's very scientific. You take the relative humidity and the air temperature, and there's like a formula for that, but not the same situation for wind chill factor.
Exactly, yeah. And dew point is very straightforward. Dew point is just the temperature at which air condenses. So the higher the higher the dew point temperature, the more moisture we have in the atmosphere, and boom. That's much more straightforward. That's a good way to put it.
Emily, thanks for the call. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Jason Goff here, our guest in the waning moments of the program, Dave in LaGrange. Dave.
Yeah, hi, guys. The show's been really interesting today, so thanks for that.
Thank you.
I don't have a question. I have just more of an observation. Last week when we had the big snowstorm, I live here in Dutchess. I work down in Rockland County. So I left work at about 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and I'm driving up the thruway. And I get to Harriman, and it's 36 degrees and raining pretty hard. And I head towards Newburgh, and by the time I got to Newburgh, it was 29 degrees and snowing incredibly hard. Mm-hmm. And it was almost like I never drove through such a sudden change, so dramatic of a change in the weather. It was really quite unbelievable.
Yeah, you would expect that going more east-west as opposed to north-south, I would imagine.
I suppose. I mean, you know, I knew that, you know, it was going to be a little colder up here and all of that kind of thing, but I just didn't think it would happen so abruptly. That's what it was.
Well, that's what can happen this time of year. You bring up a good point in that sense. The reason that squall was so intense was because there was such a temperature difference between the air in front of that front and the air behind it. Mm. And we dropped off, you know, you'll drop off 10 degrees or more sometimes.
Yeah.
That's the way it goes.
Yeah. It really was something to drive through, that's for sure.
Good. Well, I'm glad you weren't walking. That's good.
Thanks, Dave. And now over to Joel in East Greenbush. Joel, you're on.
Hey, guys. Great to hear the conversation. Great to hear Jason again. Seeing you on TV.
Yeah, well, thank you, sir.
My quick question is St. Elmo's fire or ball lightning? My aunt who lived down in Miami, Florida, said one came in through her window and went across her counter, and we were never sure if she was crazy or if that's something that could happen.
There have been a lot of reports of that nature.
Yes, there really have been. I've never seen it, but there are certainly enough accounts that's very difficult at best to explain scientifically, but science can't explain everything. You know, we don't know everything. That is for darn sure. But ball lightning, I've heard about that where it'll just roll through a house.
Yep.
You know, right in the back door and out
strange.
The front. Yeah, so it's it's not something I spend a whole lot of time on because it is such a different phenomenon, but it is fascinating, and I can imagine it would be really scary.
Yeah, that's what she said, but thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
Have a great day, guys.
You
Thanks
too.
A lot. Any prevailing wisdom as to what, in fact, ball lightning is and how it could even be?
Well, it's been studied. It's obviously a concentration of charges. The way that electricity charges move is that you have to have a potential difference, right? Mm-hmm. So you want to go from positive to a negative, and you know, so you're talking about, you know, a collection in essence of an electrical field, and it's moving. And again,
it's a coherent mass, though, and it's moving. In other words, it's not just a diffuse field. It is not necessarily ball-shaped, but it is there, and it moves around.
And it is emitting energy that you can see in the form of light,
yeah.
And it is moving along. So it's, again, I don't know a whole lot about it. I haven't done a lot of reading about it, but I can imagine that there are a lot of people that are trying to figure it out. I know there are, but it's different. It's difficult to do also because you never know when it's going to show up or where, so it's difficult to study something you can't see or quantify.
Well, this would be great if everyone who was at your website starts peppering you with questions about ball lightning. That'll make your life very, very enjoyable.
I will tell you what, Ray, I do have you'll notice on the site, it's not just forecast now. I do have a site on there as a weather library, so I have all kinds of things on there like space weather and, you know, talk about different eclipses or whatever that might be coming up. But my favorite section on there is called Dropping Knowledge, where I'll answer questions. So there's a thing on there about the polar vortex, how hail is formed, the different types of precipitation.
All right.
So knock yourselves out. Right. And if you have questions, just email me, jason@jasonsweather.com.
That's right. And make sure that Jason follows through and gets us the answer on the ball lightning. jasonsweather.com is the website. Jason Goff, thanks for being here, man. We appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
We'll see you soon. Support comes from Capital Carshare, a car-sharing network offering a fleet of eco-friendly vehicles for neighborhood transportation. 24-hour reservations available online, capitalcarshare.org, for donations and information. Penny Farthing, socially responsible investment management of personal retirement and endowment portfolios, Amherst, pennyfarthinginvestment.com, Eric Bright, CFA. And Saratoga Jewish Community Arts, presenting their 6th annual evening of Jewish storytelling with live entertainment and dinner for adults and children, March 3rd, 5:30 p.m. at Skidmore College, 518-584-8730, option 2. Thanks again to Jason Goff for being here. Thank you for listening. Great calls, as always. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Phones were answered by Dina Salzman. Jim Lavoulis is our producer. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, astronomer Bob Berman is back to talk maybe space weather. We'll find out right now. Stand by for news.